So I'm at the free play space at the GDC, and I'm helping people find games. And I look over and there's somebody standing and they're looking over at games. And I walk up to them and I say, oh, are you looking for a game? Can I help you find a game? He's like, no. And then I saw their shirt and it said Direwolf Digital. And I was like, and he happened to be standing right next to our Misplay banner. And so I pointed to it and I was like, we did a podcast for 3 years about Eternal. And he's like, oh, not something he remembers.
We have to remember that Eternal was a Direwolf Digital passion project and not one of their flagship products.
Yes. So I tell him just a little bit about it. I drop a few names, Colacoma, Watchwolf, kind of nods his head. And then I say, what do you do at Direwolf? He's like, I'm the president. He founded the company, Scott Martins. That was just a funny exchange for me.
Is this where we talk about like Shadows of Giants? You met this guy. Here you are founding your own board game company.
Oh, not at all. No. I just thought it was fun to have met them and they didn't still know who I am.
It is a funny coincidence.
I'm Hunter Pence and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we play a tile from the board instead of the shared pool. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
Before you tell your story.
Yes.
I have done that one in playingcards.io.
Did you catch it yourself? Or did your whoever you're playing with?
No, whoever I was playing with had to point it out.
That's what happened today. So I am playtesting my game at the GDC. I've got somebody playing it for the first time. They've never seen it before. We're maybe 4 or 5 moves into the game. I look down at the board, my own game under one sky, and I pick up a tile from the board, place it somewhere else, and then move another tile. And he's like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. And I'm like, do what? He's like, you can play a tile from the board? And I'm like, I mean, I can't process it yet. I don't know what I've done wrong. And so they've got to explain it to me and say, you took the tile from the board and moved it and not from over here in the shared pool. And I'm like, oh, no, you can't do that. I just was not thinking. Funny to be corrected by a playtester who's playing the game for the first time. They have no confidence in me.
I was really trying to find a way to say that's as good as any, but that is the best Misplay we've heard this season.
I've said this to playtesters before. I feel like when you sit down and playtest a game for the very first time against the game designer, you shouldn't win that game. Any game that I sit down to playtest and I've never played the game and the game designer has built it from the ground up and has played it 100 times, I should lose 90% of the time, right?
Maybe. Depends on the game.
Our game, I'm still like 50-50. Anybody could beat me.
It's how you know you're onto something.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good thing.
Kills me a little bit that you're hitting me with the teasers of your time at GDC, but we're actually here to talk about manufacturing.
Yeah. Those not related.
No. One of those I'm enthusiastically interested in hearing about. The other you are going to have to draw me kicking and screaming through.
Manufacturing, really?
It's not excellent.
But that's the plan today. We're going to do something, I think, a little different. We're going to have a bit of a working session. We're going to be talking about manufacturing, which is not Mark's favorite topic.
Here's my attempt at manufacturing my enthusiasm for it.
Well done.
I'm excited.
Before we do that, this week's episode is brought to you by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual's YouTube channel, welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. This is the year where we are trying to make as many conventions as possible. East Bay Board Gaming Con, KublaCon, Gen Con, maybe even PAX West. Mark, did you know about the Board Game Casual Con?
I know we didn't get to go this year.
We didn't get a badge. I'd like to. Every so often, Board Game Casual gets together with their friends and plays a treasure trove of games. In a recent video, they recap their winter 2026 con and they rank all of their favorite games. Maybe one day we're going to make it to a Board Game Casual con.
I hope so.
Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual channel. All right. The Thing. Nice.
It's my party whistle.
Yeah, no, it's a great bumper. manufacturing the fun.
We're going to try. You like this part.
I don't know if I like figuring this out because I don't know anything about it. I feel like when we're four games deep, I think I'll find it more fun because I'll know more. I have no idea what I'm doing right now. That isn't fun.
I'm thinking because I kind of like that trial and error type of learning in other aspects of my life. I find trial and error learning that like not knowing what I'm doing kind of fun when I'm thinking about rock climbing. I like the uncertainty of playing someone new in dance fighting. But I agree, in a process that's filled with the number of decisions that I think are going to be in making decisions about manufacturing, I feel overwhelmed.
Let's start with what we are trying to get done is be able to tell the artist what parameters they have for creating the tile pieces. So for example, if our tile pieces are made on a cardboard punch out, I think you can get a lot more detail into the picture. If we're doing something like wooden tiles and we're just going to have it like stamped, there's less detail in the picture unless you are putting like a sticker. And I think of Cascadia. Cascadia has a detailed picture of animals, but it feels kind of like a sticker on top of a wooden piece.
That's already more choices than I had imagined for picking what the tiles are going to be.
Oh, no. So Mark and I have not talked about manufacturing that much. And today we're going to kind of figure out what we want and what we want to be able to tell the artist. We know that the main things that we have to figure out are, what are the tile pieces? What is the game board made out of? We had an episode where we went to the game parlor. We pulled out pieces. We looked at pieces. Since then, we've done some additional research and looked at other games. I think we have narrowed in where we want to be. We've narrowed in on a landing cost, and I think that's going to drive some of our decisions once we can say exactly what we want and ask a manufacturer for a quote. Landed cost, we want to be somewhere around $5. Going to $8, $9, it's not going to work. We're not going to be able to sell the game for $40. I think we can get away with a $6 landed cost, and that's selling the game for $30. So I think the first thing that we have to talk about is the game board. And we got feedback on Discord as well. People weighed in, and I think a lot of people had said, I think you have to prioritize keeping the pieces locked when you rotate and move the board. You don't want pieces falling or sliding out. And I think they're right. So I think we're at a position where what we want is a punch board. We don't know exactly what size the box is yet. That's going to matter a great deal. But it's a 5x5 square. And inside of that are little punch outs where the tile and the piece is going to go. So the artwork is going to be the entire 6x6. Let's just call it a 6-inch by 6-inch square. The artwork is going to be like the background of a night sky. And then there'll be a punch out for the 5x5 grids. So there'll be 25 little spots for you to put a tile to fit in. The question is, are they squares? Are they circles? We're leaning towards circle tiles, but what do we want the grid to look like?
Doesn't the grid have, like, a grid by definition is a square or a rectangle?
Is it? I don't know if that's true. I think you can make a grid of circles.
They're going to make an array.
They're going to make an array.
So it's a grid. A grid is a rectangle.
Think about Connect Four. Those are all circles.
Yes, but they exist in a rectangular grid frame.
Right. Ours would as well. So do we want the punch out to be a circle or do we want the punch out to be a square?
He's already killing me.
I mean, the pieces are round. Why would you not want a round cutout?
I think size matters here. The thing that immediately comes to mind is, how hard are pieces going to be to remove when we're making board moves? So when I place my blue tile and move my surrounding tile one space, how are we going to make it so that it's very easy to get the surrounding tile for me to pick it up and move it to its next place? Because we know with the punch out board that we're not going to be sliding pieces. Everything is going to be lift in place.
Right. And I think that was one of the reasons why we're leaning towards circles, is circles, they feel easier to pick up. They feel easier to get around. There's more, is it dead space around the punch out?
If you put it in a square, if you fit circle to circle, you have like a lock key and then it's harder to take out.
It depends how much space. Imagine a 5x5 circle grid array and all of the circles were touching each other. That would be difficult. Separate the circles by 2 inches. That's too far, but you'd have lots of space, no matter how tight that circle is. So I think there's some balance between how close they are, because I don't think you have to have, because we talked about having a punch out and then a piece and then lots of space around it, but you could make it pretty much exact if you just allowed more space left or right for the next tile, up, down as well.
It's hard for me to picture, but I think I know what you're saying.
I'm going to get paper. We're working today. Now, what's great about drawing this for you is how great that translates for our podcast audience.
Hello, I'd like to introduce you to narrating Mark. Jason has drawn a rectangle.
I'm going to make just circle cutouts.
There are 10 of them.
You want me to do 25?
No.
I'll do 25. Don't.
You do whatever illustrates your point.
Okay. These are the circles, the cutouts, the punch outs. And here's a tile piece. Small, right? I put one there. There's lots of space around here to grab. Or I make it fit pretty much exactly. Now you don't have as much space. Do you see that? As I go to grab this piece, my fingers are going to hit that.
Yes. Jason is drawing another rectangle.
Do you want 10 circles? What do you want?
5 is good. Okay. They don't fit in the rectangle.
I'm not an artist. So now I can draw them exact, but there's a gap between where I'm grabbing them. Does that illustrate my point?
I see what you're saying, but I think in both ways, you have to consider how much clearance you're going to have from the tile fitting into the slot, because it's not going to fit like flush, right? I'm not going to have the cutout and perfectly closed so that the surface is smooth of the board, correct?
I have no idea what you're saying, and I'm in front of you.
I can't draw it. I don't draw in 3 dimensions. I don't draw in 2 dimensions. You know how in our prototype, the board sits lower than the tiles?
Yes.
That also has to apply to our board. I think that space is more important than what you're talking about.
The tile's going to drop down. If this is a side view of the board, and if you're looking in, it's cut out there. The tile sits down there. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes. But I'm talking about how much does it rise above?
Oh, yeah, it should be considerable.
I think that's the more pressing piece, because that will dictate which of these two options of how much space in the punch out to fill. If you go higher off the board, you have to go wider.
Sure.
But like that clearance matters, because like if I'm closer, the closer I am, the closer the pieces are, the more you'd need like clearance to flip it out. And the more I'm even just like touching on the circles being close to each other, I want them to be farther out. Option 2.
Squares.
That's option 3. Jason is drawing 5 squares now.
What was option 2 if this is 3?
Option 2. Still circle cutouts, but farther spaced apart to make easier fingers.
Option 3. Spaced out squares, circle pieces.
I don't know why, but I like option 3, but this is an aesthetics thing. You're more the aesthetics person.
People have told us, well, this is a really good thing to try to sort out right now, because that would change the box art. Because right now the box is showing a grid in the sky. The grid has squares. If we were doing circles, you wouldn't then put a square around the circle like that, right?
The lines on the grid that are on the box art will be implied by the depth of the cutouts. You'll still see the squares.
What squares if we did circles?
You're still going to see the units in measure based on how things are raised.
There's the whole board I'm drawing.
Those are too close.
Sure. Imagine further apart. There's no squares.
There's a square here. There's a square here. Your eye will find them because you have to play the game. You're going to change the constellation cards too. I think you have to have squares. The more we're talking about it, your eye is just going to build them for you.
That's what other people have said to us. Other people have said they should be squares.
See, I have made that argument. It is the logical argument.
I'm ready to move squares on. Box it, ship it.
Box it. Box art, ship it.
Nice. So there's squares. They're spaced out. We have circles that go inside of them. Now, circles don't. A circle in a circle cutout would, your eyes, would hold better. It would, you know, if it got moved around and rotated, there's less dead space around it. A circle in a square can move around if it's not flush and touching the sides. Is that okay?
They're not going to misplace themselves. Like when we were at Game Parlor and we were wiggling boards, we were seeing pieces move in a way where the location of the tile that we would put down would be obscured by that kind of drift. In this, it's still just going to drift within its slot. There might be some dimension management that we have to find where pieces will fit and be able to like drift comfortably in their slot. But I don't think you're going to lose the position of the tile that you placed.
Let me ask you the question that at least one member of our audience is listening and going, why are you making circles? Why don't you just make squares that go in squares? Stars aren't inherently round, right? From a distance, look round?
In my head, I think a circle allows for a little bit of a different style of art. And I'm hoping we'll carry kind of like the lighting of the whatever art winds up on the tiles. You see the light of a star. Like when you look at light in the sky, or like when I look at light out in the night sky, you kind of see gradients and it kind of rotates out in that kind of concentric circles kind of way.
I'm going to challenge you a little bit further, because one of the things that I've heard frequently, even with the tiles that Tor created for us, they demonstrate how the tiles move. I heard that today at GDC. People really like that the orthogonal tiles are kind of pointing left, right, up, down. The diagonal tiles point diagonal. Isn't that harder to do on a circle? Is it harder to show a diagonal moves on a circle than a square? Because you can point corner to corner. When you place a square, it's always going to be showing the point to the corners. You can place a circle, though, in a way where the diagonal isn't going right to the next piece, because you could place a circle in 360 degrees.
Jason cut one of the circles that he drew into non-equilateral triangles. I'm going to draw one where I cut them into equilateral triangles.
Sure. And this is the diagonal piece, right?
You're trolling me.
What do you mean? This is the orthogonal? Because I was doing the diagonal, so you're now doing orthogonal.
Yes, I drew the orthogonal piece.
Okay, give me the pencil back. Just imagine that rotated slightly, right? I could turn that a little bit and then it would look diagonal. If I turn this 90 degrees, it's going to look like this, and that's diagonal. So now the piece that is orthogonal, if I place it 90 degrees, it's going to look like it's a diagonal piece.
Maybe this is an artist question. Jason and I are drawing pluses and multiplication symbols. That is the extent of our art capacity.
That was really good. I did a good one there.
It's fine.
Okay.
I mean, it clearly demonstrates the error in my thinking. You're right. But why do they have to be plus sign minus? Sure. That's not what our artist is going to do.
But it's going to be something that's representing a diagonal move.
Sure.
And now that I'm thinking about it and seeing it, I don't know if a circle can contain that, because you can place it in any degree. Whereas a square, you can only place at 0, 90, 180, 270, I guess 360.
How about that for diagonal?
Wow.
I know that looks bad.
Yeah, that's your art level. Mark has drawn what I appear to be a broken Easter egg. I see an Easter egg that's been like cracked open.
I need you to focus on the slanting lines of the diagonals here.
It's thunderbolts.
Sure. Slanted thunderbolts.
Yeah. These are going to be straight lines. Yeah. Pencil. We keep going back and forth. He's drawn...
This show's terrible.
Which are now straight lines going down. But I'm going to turn that piece, because you can set it in... When you place a circle, you can set it in any... Now, which way are your slashes going? Just say it, Mark.
They're askewed.
Diagonal? Is that the word you're looking for? I can place that and make that look diagonal now. That's not a diagonal piece.
Squares it is. Ship it.
Box it. You got to box it before you ship
win.
It. No, it's... I don't like that.
I don't mean in like this is a confrontation of like, it has to be my way.
Right.
I mean... You are demonstrating things where I think my thinking is not correct.
What was my thinking too? I came into this 100%. These were circle pieces. If I was putting a quote out to a manufacturer, a circle pieces. But in just sitting down here with paper and playing around with this, I'm seeing, I don't know if circles can work. You're right. There might be an art answer. It's something that we can go to other Mark and say, what do you think? Circle punch out square tiles. Option 4. I don't really want. Well, don't even.
Wait.
Don't imagine.
Wait. That.
No. Oh, no.
Wait.
No. No. Good.
Why don't you like it?
A circle with a. I mean, how would you. You'd have to make it a big circle to put a square in it. There's a lot of dead space.
Makes it easy to pick up, preserves directionality. And I actually think this looks more like a star.
A circle?
A square in a circle.
A square in a circle looks more like a star than a square in a square. I think the star is just on the tile.
So you're a no on the square in a circle.
I mean, I'm a hard no at the moment. Yeah. I mean, if we saw it in a physical space and somebody, if there's a game we can find where squares go in circles.
Don't you just like 3D print the proof of concept for yourself?
Yeah. I mean, you could do something like that.
Where does that leave us then? We have to go back to circle in a square or circle in a circle or square in a square?
Square in a square. That's where I'm leaning based on what we talked about, because you can't clearly show how a tile moves with a circle piece because it can be placed in different degrees.
I think I can get behind that if the primary weight carrier of how you're getting across the star in the game is just the art on the tiles, then the shape really doesn't matter and we should choose the one that's most efficient or functional for the board and the design of the tiles.
And I've heard from multiple people that they really like that they don't have to reference the rules and they can look at the tile as a reminder for how it moves.
Gameplay is always paramount over aesthetic.
We spent more time on this than I thought we were. But this is great. This is like, we don't have enough of these moments where we sit down and really talk about this. So for now, let's say square board, square pieces, square cutouts.
Boom.
What are we making them out of? We were coming into this with two options.
I'm ready.
Cardboard, like thick cardboard, or wooden pieces.
I feel like this is one of those things where I say something and then you're like, landed cost.
Okay.
So I'm going to get ahead of that.
Okay.
Why would we not go to a manufacturer and say, here's our components list for our game. Here's our desired landed cost. What are the wood and cardboard options? Because we've talked about it in brief before that we're going to try to avoid plastics. In wood and cardboard options, what are the options available to us that would fit the need of what we're designing here for the tiles and meet our landed cost? Or are there other... I still really like the idea of the glass marble.
Landed cost.
But we haven't asked a manufacturer.
Sure. Yeah, I wonder how much... I mean, there must be people... This is a goal before our next episode. Let's understand who does that. There must be people at Long Pack. There must be people at Panda that we can reach out to and say, we're building a board game. This is what we're thinking. Can you give us a rough idea of where cost is going to be? I don't know if I can go to them and say, build my board game, pick out all of our pieces for us.
No, that's not what I'm saying to do though. I'm saying we want square board, square tile. What would be the quote for that components list with wood piece, cardboard piece, glass piece, marble piece, whatever. I don't think that's an unrealistic ask.
We have to talk more about what you mean by marble for sure and glass, but I imagine you're right. We should ask. One of the things that isn't affected by that cost is shipping cost afterwards, because those pieces are going to be heavier. Maybe there's light glass. Maybe there's light acrylic.
You said no plastics.
Acrylic's plastic, right?
Yep.
None of that. So it's more than just cost. It ends up affecting shipping costs too, because we need the weight. So it's a combination of cost and weight. I think I remember hearing somewhere like, keep your game under 1 pound. Like the box is like half a pound though.
No game weighs under 1 pound.
I don't believe that's true.
Cascadia weighs more than a pound.
Quick search. Small card games fall under a pound. Most typical light family games are somewhere between 2 and 4 pounds. I forget the number I heard before, but it was some number we should stay under. I should find that number.
We should find that number.
For shipping. Catan is roughly 2.5 pounds. You would think that would be more. It's a bigger box.
But all the pieces are soft.
So yes, we have to go to them. We have to ask for a little bit of help. We have to ask for different quotes. But we still have to understand the art that's going to go on top of the tile. If it's cardboard, it can be different than the wood piece. Glass, or it's not going to have any, right? It's just going to be a color.
Well, I think then you invest more in the board art.
Sure. We had some of our community members in Discord talk about games that use little glass or marble pieces. Then you would make the art kind of pop out when you put the piece on top of it, which could look cool. I don't know. Like, this is what I talked about before. This isn't fun because I have no idea like what's possible within our cost and our budget. I bet there's really unique things that we could do with a star game. The way that you make your board. And we talked before to Ryan, who was like, I was thinking, guys, you should put lights underneath it. And when you place, there'd be like a magnet on the piece. And when you place it into its spot, it triggers the light to shoot up. And that would look cool. Totally. Take that back a few levels. There must be things that you can do with the art and pieces to create an effect like that. I have no idea. And we have always talked about this being our first foray into building a game. And as much as I would love to create like a super unique board, part of me just wants to make it all in cardboard, put it in a box, get it out, learn how to do that, how to create a Kickstarter, how to find a manufacturer, create a Kickstarter, figure out fulfillment, and just get orders, ship them, and say, not say that we're done, but just to say, I did this. I made this game. And maybe this is something I want to keep doing. Maybe the misplay continues and we make another game. It isn't super important to me that this game has like all the bells and whistles. I'm just trying to understand the process.
I'm not saying bells and whistles, but like think back to my time at Gen Con when you were like, go talk to manufacturers. I was obviously not asking the right questions when I sat down, when I tried to like sit down with somebody.
Was that my voice, by the way?
No.
Go talk to manufacturers.
No, I'm just...
Okay.
It's the caricature of you that I have in my head. Okay. You're the boss.
Okay.
But there were other people who had their component list. And they were like, hey, I want to meet with somebody. I'm serious about getting quotes and understanding. And what I was getting from reps was like, here's your minimum order quantity. You have to do 1,000 orders. There's 1,500, 2,000. Pricing changes, gets cheaper as you do more. And some people were like, if you really ask nicely, maybe we'll do a 500 for you. And then they sent me on my way and was like, here's your like sample kit. I applied for a sales job out of college. I guarantee you there's somebody whose job it is to sit down with people like us and walk us through and answer these questions. It might be a question of like, how do we get in a hold of one of those people? How do you set up a meeting with one of those people? But there's got to be somebody who's going to sit down a first-time game designer and take them through, not make the decisions for them, but like show them what questions they should be asking that they don't know how to ask. Because I'm like, okay, we pick the cardboard piece and the wooden piece. And then what's our art? What's our way of putting the art on the wooden piece? What's our way of putting the art on the cardboard piece? Like we have High Tide, and High Tide has what looks to be some kind of like embossed or like stamped line drawing, which is way more detailed and sophisticated than the like take a sponge and stamp on your Quirkle piece.
Right.
So like, like floundering in the dark, but there are people whose job it is to take you by the hand and lead you into the light. Their light, but into the light.
We have to find that person.
I gave you a bunch of business cards, didn't I?
You did. You did. I have those somewhere. Someone listening, I think it was Micah on Discord was listening a couple of episodes ago when we were talking about UI stuff, and he was like just hitting a like a wall, like, what are these guys doing? I have ideas. This isn't how you do it. Hopefully somebody's listening right now and going, yeah, I know that person. Like that's an easy phone call, guys.
Or like just go to next time we're at a Golden Gate Game Makers event. There are plenty of people who have games. There are people that we've had on the show that you could ask that question to.
Yeah.
Who do I talk to?
I like your thinking. Going back to the actual piece though, between cardboard, wood, and some other marble, glass, I'm still team keep the cost down. So I would probably choose cardboard punch out, thick cardboard punch out. Then I would say if wooden is close, wooden's going to have a nice feel.
There's a world where I like the heavy cardboard better than wood if it's close.
If you think about the Night Cage, I think we both really like the printing and how those pieces felt. They got to be thicker to fit inside a cutout. So we'd want them thicker, but like the quality of the art on them was good.
Yeah, I wonder how the thickness on cardboard would, depending on how thick you go, right? How will that hold up over time? Because I'm like, I do like the idea of like a little bit of a heavier piece, which probably the cardboard is a less expensive option because I really don't enjoy that wood that feels like air.
Yeah, I mean, wood's going to hold up better than cardboard. Cardboard is going to fray. Corners are going to get messed up.
Especially depending on how tightly they have to fit into the frame.
Especially since people are going to play our game so much once they get it. It's not a one and done. They got to fill out all the constellation cards.
There you go. You found a way to gimmick people into playing the game 9 times. Have we cut the standee yet? I'm still team anti-standee.
You can't cut the standee. I know you're really looking out for landed cost at the moment, but it's not going to add much. I don't want to have to keep looking at the star chart because what you're saying is you look down at your constellation, you get your card, and then you just put it face down and you don't have to look at it again. Or if you do want to look at it again, you pick it up and you look at it. Whereas a standee just lets you keep it up all the time. We have seen it knocked over in playtests, especially since the ones that we have are just cheaply 3D printed and there's not a lot of weight to it. So, you know, any good gust of air is going to knock it over. It's nice to have it up. It's a nice visual. Plus, you're showing off if there's a name already on it, that it's up and you're looking at it. Somebody has won with this before. You get to see it. I don't like having to like constant, because I would have to constantly pick it up. And you're going to argue, well, you can just look at the star chart.
Yes.
It's out already. You don't need to have your own personal card visible because all three constellations are visible on the star chart.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel like I have to constantly refer to it. And if you see me looking down at the star chart, I feel like you'll know which is my pattern if I'm always looking in a certain direction. Is that next level? Am I who's operating on that level? But if you are looking at the star chart, I'm going to look at where your eyes are going.
Isn't there a poker term for that? Angle shooting? Is that a thing?
Might be.
I don't think people are going to angle shoot in our game. You might.
I will. Absolutely. I need every edge I can get.
I'm not going to die on the no standee hill.
We will still have to, decide what we want, what shape the star chart is going to be, and what the cards are in our hand, the constellation cards. So we have the constellation cards and we have the star charts. There's three star charts and then nine constellation cards. I mean, it makes sense to make the constellation cards playing card size. That's standard board game things. We could make it a square. We could make it round.
I think that round would make more sense if we were doing the round pieces. But now that we're back to everything's a square, why wouldn't you keep more quadrilateral based rectangles and squares? You can have a rectangle star chart. You can have your rectangle cards.
Yeah, I agree with that logic. One of the things that's come up recently in our playtests, in our blind playtests, is that people were positioning, you know, the red line in ways we didn't think they would. I just thought they'd put it up or down, and they were putting it left and right. We've agreed, we've talked about it. That's a great way to play our game. We should allow people to play all four rotations on a card. But then what shape is that card, and how do we mark it? You could mark it with colors, right? There's a blue side, there's a red side, a yellow side. I don't like that visually. I would like to find language that goes with navigation. At first I thought north, south, east, and west. Then I thought there's not really north and east and south. But what a playtester told me today at GDC was, yeah, but you're not in space. You're just looking up. So you would tell somebody look to the east or northeast or...
Good point.
And I was like, yeah, I'm not in space. The stars are, but I am not. So maybe north, east, south, and west does work.
It's a good point.
So some directionality, some shape of those cards, we have to figure that out.
I do love the idea of a nice little compass, small little compass graphic.
Yeah, and it could be on the constellation cards as well. And you just match it. You point north, whatever, south, whatever orientation you're going to set the star chart, mm-hmm. you position your card to match. I think that makes more sense than a single red line on the bottom. Colors would make sense, I think. You line up the blue, you line up the green, the yellow, but...
That sounds ugly.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
I'm into the compass idea, especially if we get to use north, south, east, west.
Last piece for now is the rule book.
Yes.
What size do you make it? Size of the box?
Well, that was something that I was thinking about where in thinking about the feedback from Jordan of be more specific about everything, label everything. As I go into starting to revise the rule book, I wanted to ask, how much does word count matter to you? Because if we're going to be that specific of naming every meaning-bearing noun in the game each time it's in the rule book, you're going to inevitably have a longer rule book than what it is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially since we'll be adding more images. And I think the constraint that I'd given you was solely based on Cardboard Edison, that we wanted it to be a short, clear rule book. I think it's going to be longer than it is now. I think there'll be more words. But more importantly, when we have the correct art, I think lots of art, lots of pictures, showing the setup of how you set up the star chart in a couple of pictures that, you know, you're highlighting, you line up the north to the north, showing it from both sides, maybe better pictures of how the pieces move. So yeah, I because of the simplicity of our game, I don't think we're ever going to run into an issue where the rule book is too long. It's more just about like, what does it look like? How does it fit in the box? Have you thought at all about the insert?
What?
The thing that holds everything. So you open the box, you open a board game box, and then there's usually some plastic. Oh, we don't want a plastic insert. We have to figure that out.
Connect Four box doesn't have any of that. Has a one-page rule sheet.
It's all plastic pieces. But it has, yeah. It doesn't have an insert. You just throw everything in there.
Yes.
We don't want that. That's messy. We want something set up. It can be cardboard where cards are on one side, the pieces are on another with the bag. Standees. And then
cardboard standees don't survive.
The rule book can just sit on top. I don't know. When I put away a game, I just throw the rule book on the top and close the box.
Sure. So it's roughly box size or half of your insert.
Yeah. I would try to get away with making it because the last thing when you're closing, putting everything, you put the board down and then put the rule book on top of it. Mm-hmm. So I think it just, as long as it fits like the size of the board, I think that would be the target.
I think you could almost, depending on how picture galore we go, you could almost do like a one-sided, like a double-sided sheet the size of the box We'll have to see. And I think this falls into the realm of there are different rules to the rule book. There is the rules writing, which is our obligation to create the content, the language, the information that players are going to need in order to learn the game without somebody there to teach them. And then it is in the realm of the graphic designer that we ask to lay out the text to advise and suggest, well, how about this style of layout and this size in service of conveying the information in a way that's graphically clear and reads well.
Yeah, you're right. I've been stuck on, I have to open up Google Docs and set the margins to where we want it before I can start working on the rule book. But you and I really, we just have to do the language.
And decide what needs the visual supports.
Yeah. And then leave the rest to other Mark and Scott.
Jason, I think we manufactured some fun. This was not the tooth extraction that I thought it was going to be. Please tell me you had fun at Game Design Con.
Not at all what it's called.
Yeah, see, that's why you're not allowed to use letters.
GDC. Yeah. It's the Game Developers Conference.
I was so close. I had two of the words right.
This is primarily a video game electronic conference. So this is in the Moscone Center in San Francisco, which is a really big convention space. And in the West Hall upstairs, there's a free game space. Gamescape is set up and they're selling games. They also have a games library so people from the conference can just walk over and find a game on the shelf and play it. They had Hot Streak. I really wanted to play Hot Streak. Then they had tables set up for game developers and you signed up through the Golden Gate Game Makers. And so we signed up through the Golden Gate Game Makers and they gave us, I have a 1 week badge for GDC, which is like $1,000. It's really neat that we were able to do that. I wasn't able to go every day. I was only able to go on Thursday and Friday. So I got to go and I got to playtest our game. In exchange for doing that, in exchange for the badge, I also needed to volunteer and help out in the free game space. So there was one day where I spent a few hours helping people find games. So people at the conference would just walk by and they would go, oh, board games. And I'm like, yeah, would you like to play one? And they're like, yeah. So I'd help them find a game. So I would match them to developers based on what they were looking for or what was open. Got to meet a lot of game designers. Leonie was there from Biome. She was playtesting new games she's working on. There was a pickleball game that I really liked as somebody who plays some pickleball. And the designer for that game gave me such a great quote because there was just constantly people walking into the play space. And I was always setting people down, like, oh, go try this game. And as soon as that game ended, 45 minutes after their debrief, as soon as those four people stood up, I had four more ready to go to sit down. And at one point I said, man, you have not taken a break yet. Like, do you want me to watch your stuff? Do you want to go get water? There's still more people gathering around. And he said to me, taking a break now would be a disservice to the opportunity. And I thought, man, that needs to be on a poster. That's such a great quote. Taking a break now would be a disservice to the opportunity.
It might not be on a poster, but it's sure on a podcast.
Yes. I got to sit down and playtest Under One Sky, and I got some really good feedback. Some things that we talked about knew already, like we want to put must in the rule book where you must take its action. I got some feedback on colors. Somebody was playing the game who was colorblind. And so I was saying, you know, the blue tile does this and the orange tile does that. And they go, yeah, but are the images all the same on them? And I go, no, there's different images. Like, that's the differentiator for me. So they weren't able to tell the difference between the orange and the yellow.
That was something that we saw for in an earlier prototype because yellow used to be gray.
Correct. I forget how it became yellow. Taurus tile?
No idea.
Yeah, me either. I don't know.
Have to go back into our dev diaries.
Yeah. So it's just a really cool experience to be at the GDC because I got people to play the game who, you know, weren't board game designers, but they're board game adjacent. So these are all video game designers and video game artists. And it was really great to see them come play the game as we're trying to find our audience. A lot of these people are our audience.
Tell me more.
I think it's a relatively casual game. I don't think you have to have a deep love of space. I don't think you have to be a player who is just like really into board games. I think that the simplicity of how the game functions is good enough to draw people in because they get how the game works. And then the feedback that I got pretty frequently was, there's depth here. There's a lot of strategy. As people got further into the game and they realized all the different things they could be factoring in and considering, you know, when you place your first tile on the board, you only have like one decision. You're going to place it. It doesn't affect any other tile. Your second tile to the board has a bit more options. Then your third's got more. And, you know, as the game progresses, then there's like 50 things you can be factoring in. And that doesn't even take into account trying to plan for what your opponent is doing and how the board is rotating in three turns. So there's depth, I keep hearing.
I'll take it.
Absolutely. So really, really thankful to the Golden Gate Game Makers, to Unpub, and especially Gamescape for having us.
Did you find that the players that you were getting for Under One Sky had, I know you shared some of the feedback, but was there like something different in the quality of the feedback because they weren't like board game designers and they weren't like board game aficionados and they're not board game contest judges? Because like that's been the space that we have tested in.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I think the difference in a space like this, I think board game designers are much quicker to tell you the things they don't like. And they think about the game in a way they would make it, what they would do differently. And I think the people that were playtesting at the GDC weren't thinking about it that way. And I did have a thought walking around in the few hours that I was helping and I was listening to feedback at other tables and other games. And I couldn't help but think quite frequently, people say things they think the game designer wants to hear. People in this environment were overwhelmingly positive about any of the games. The feedback that I was hearing from people was, you know, this is really good, or I really like this. You did a good job. It felt very kind of, you know, you tell them the things that they want to hear. Whereas other game designers are like, what do you do? Why are you doing that? It's a different tone.
I don't know that I would necessarily characterize that as like, oh, this is like just a thing that other designers do. It more to me points to the different context that you're walking in, right? Like you're walking in probably in this like professional networking conference, right? So like they're not here to make fun of people, pick fights, burn bridges kinds of things. Whereas I think you're saying it a little bit of tongue in cheek of like, oh, like, why are you doing this? I would do it this way. But I think this is how it felt for me when I've gone to Golden Gate Game Maker events, is the community there is there to support, test, stress test the games that are being brought to them in a way that helps new designers or the designer that's bringing that particular game to help them iterate on the game in a way that makes the game more likely to be successful in whatever publishing aspirations the designer might have.
I'm not saying that isn't true.
Good then.
That's my new catchphrase. I'm not saying that isn't true.
Doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
As I don't believe that's true.
The Misplay podcast is brought to you by Howley Boy Games. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. We express our humble gratitude and recognize any level of support here on our list of sponsors. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors.
I know this is less interesting to an audience listening to us, especially since they can't see our paper. We'll have to take a picture and post it.
Blue sky.
We'll have to post the picture.